Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, February 13th, 2018. Let's get started with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, University of Illinois Colleges Unveil $11 Million Investment Plan. Unit Pool Funds Apply for Projects. This article is written by Julie Worth and is based out of Urbana. A state-of-the-art engineering teaching center and a partnership that will allow high school students in China to take University of Illinois courses online is among the first 17 Investment for Growth projects funded at the U of I campus. Colleges and other academic units pooled $11 million to underwrite projects designed to boost income and enhance the U of I's academic mission as a way to help absorb state funding cutbacks. We can't just cut our way out of these things, said Paul Ellinger, E-L-L-I-N-G-E-R, Associate Chancellor and Vice Provost for Budget and Resource Planning. The campus has to use multiple strategies, reducing costs, reorganizing operations to improve efficiency, cutting programs that aren't working, and investing in new ones, he said. Each college and campus research institute was asked to contribute a small chunk of its budget to a central pool of money, ranging from 0.9% to 3.5% for larger colleges. The units were then invited to submit proposals for seed money to fund new revenue-generating activities, expand existing projects, invest in automation or reorganization, or help pay for new instructional facilities and projects. The 17 ideas chosen out of 39 proposals were funded for 1 to 3 years and will receive anywhere from $220,000 to $7.5 million over that span. About $5.5 million will be available for the second round of proposals, which are being evaluated now, Ellinger said. This year's winners, some of them joint projects involving several colleges, include 6 from the College of Engineering, 5 from the Geis College of Business, 3 from the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, 3 from the School of Information Sciences, and 1 each from the College of Education, College of Media, College of Applied Health Sciences, College of Veterinary Medicine, Carl R. Woese Institute for Genomic Biology, Illinois Program for Research in the Humanities, and National Center for Supercomputing Applications. They range from new buildings to online courses to lucrative professional degree programs and industry partnerships. It isn't just to make money, Ellinger said. That was kind of the theme behind it, but it's also things we should be doing. Overseas Initiative. Some of the projects were already up and running, such as the online IMBA program launched in 2016 and the CS Plus X program, a combined degree in computer science and other disciplines designed to accommodate burgeoning demand for computer science degrees. The idea is to expand programs that show promise, he said. Among the new ideas are 2 from engineering. Here they are: an instructional building to accommodate a 10 to 15% enrollment increase over the next decade. It would include spaces to teach classes in person or online, possibly with multicasting to other sites, and an auditorium for TED Talk-like experiences, allowing departments to convert obsolete classrooms into research and laboratory spaces to attract new faculty, said spokesman Bill Bell. The funding will cover planning for the project. And a Center for Professional and Executive Training and Education. It would allow the college to offer professionally oriented graduate degree programs that are in demand: training in technology innovation, management and entrepreneurship, internships and capstone projects in the Chicago area for students, and technical expertise in cybersecurity, risk management, and data analytics. One of the LAS projects is a new international partner high school program. The college will work with companies overseas. A vendor is already lined up in Hong Kong to provide online general education courses for high school students. Students will be able to earn college credit that could be transferred to an American university, ideally the U of I, and get accustomed to online coursework in English, said Professor Randy McCarthy, who coordinates the college's online programs. The courses will be similar to MOOCs offered by the U of I through Coursera, which allow students to take online courses at a reduced cost, but also earn credit if they want to pay a higher fee. But MOOCs are designed for thousands of students, and Coursera keeps half the revenue, he said. The LAS program will be smaller, 250 to 300 students total, and offer more support from high school mentors in those countries who will be trained by U of I faculty, he said. Exams will be created and graded by U of I instructors. Initial courses will be offered in biology, psychology, economics, and atmospheric sciences. 4 or 5 private high schools in China are already interested. The courses will not count toward high school credit, unlike dual enrollment courses offered by Illinois community colleges. The international courses will cost $350 to $400 per credit hour, or $1,200, that's $1,200, for a 3-hour class. The college could net $750 to $800 per student for each course, or approximately $200,000 annually, though the program will require a $100,000 investment up front, he said. But profit isn't the primary motive, McCarthy said. He sees the program as a recruiting tool. The international market has gotten a little soft, he said. Grow the pie. Income from the investment for growth projects will be shared by the unit and the central campus, Ellinger said. There was some concern from colleges about pooling resources for a program that might only benefit some units, he said. But now that the first round of proposals has been awarded, for the most part, I think people are really excited. He said administrators tried to make the process transparent, with deans and the Campus Budget Oversight Committee reviewing all proposals. They were judged on their potential to reduce reliance on state support, become financially self-supporting, address the campus mission and areas of high demand, build synergies with other parts of campus, and minimize competition or redundancy among units. This is supposed to grow the pie, not take resources from one college and move them to another, Ellinger said. Obviously, at the end of the day, some units benefited more than others, but I think the leadership is really committed to improving the overall university, he said. The next headline reads, Missing U of I Scholar, Kidnapping Trial Pushed to 2019. Judge, Capital Case Warrants Longer Delay. This article is written by Ben Sigderman and is based out of Urbana. The trial for accused kidnapper and killer Brent, Brendt, Christensen, that's Christensen, has been pushed back to April 2, 2019. U.S. District Court Judge Colin Bruce set the date at a scheduling hearing Monday that lasted about 20 minutes. Jury selection is scheduled to begin on April 3, 2019, with the actual trial scheduled to begin on April 9th. Bruce said he expects the trial to last at least 5 weeks. Neither the prosecutors nor Christensen's attorneys objected to the new schedule. Christensen, who attended the hearing in a dark teal prison jumpsuit, did not speak at it, but was arrested on June 30, 2017, 3 weeks after visiting University of Illinois visiting scholar Ying Ying Zhang, 26, of China, was last seen. Ms. Zhang's family's lawyer in Urbana, Steve Beckett, said he has notified the family about the new date, but hasn't yet spoken with them. Ms. Zhang's family returned to China in November. I know that the family understands the process, but on the other hand, I think they'll be a little bit disappointed because they had hoped it might be in the fall, Beckett said. Christensen has been in custody at the Macon County Jail in Decatur and was originally indicted in July on a single charge of kidnapping. That was upgraded in October to kidnapping, resulting in death and lying to federal agents, making it a potential capital case. On January 19th, the government filed notice that it would seek the death penalty, leading both sides to agree that a delay would be necessary for the trial previously scheduled to begin February 27th. Prosecutors had asked that the trial be delayed until October, while Christensen's attorneys sought a delay until June of 2019. Bruce said that an October trial would be far too soon and that June 2019 was slightly too far away. He said he considered both parties' motions for proposed trial dates, American Bar Association guidelines, delays in other death penalty cases, the technical nature of much of the evidence, and the time needed for a mental health evaluation of Christensen if that was sought. In their proposal, prosecutors argued for a shorter delay, calling the charge against Christensen straightforward. They also said they've already given his attorneys, various sets of forensic evidence and don't expect mental capacity defenses. In their proposal for a longer delay, Christensen's lawyers said their requested date was on the lower end of delays in other federal capital cases and cited their obligation to fully investigate every potential defense and raise all arguable legal claims. That includes investigating Christensen's social history for any mitigating factors and a comprehensive mental health evaluation. Beckett, who has tried 2 capital cases in state court, said a delay was expected. Anybody who knows anything about death penalty cases should not be surprised. They're complicated cases with serious issues that deserve serious treatment, and that's exactly what's happening, he said. Wanting a clean slate with a new trial schedule, Bruce denied several pretrial motions and said amended versions would need to be refiled, including one by Christensen's lawyers to change the venue and drop the main charge against him. At the hearing, Bruce did not address a request last week by Christensen's lawyers to file a motion asking Bruce to recuse himself from this case. The reasoning for this motion is under seal, and prosecutors have until Thursday to respond. The next headline reads, Champaign County Nursing Home. Treasurer, financial challenges keep coming. Farney, that's F-A-R-N-E-Y. S-A-K, SAC, not open when news is bad, quote unquote. This article is written by Tom Kachik and is based out of Urbana. A $150,000 short-term advance payment to the Champaign County Nursing Home has been repaid, but more difficult financial times lie ahead for the institution, the county treasurer warns. The loan from county collector funds, needed to help meet payroll 2 weeks ago, has been repaid, said county treasurer John Farney. The advance had to come from emergency funds, he said, not from county general funds that would have required county board action. There's another payroll of about $240,000 coming up later this week, he said, and the nursing home had only about $160,000 on hand Monday morning. They haven't told me yet whether they're going to need help, Farney said, of the management company SAC Management Services, LLC, which runs the facility. But SAC officials said Monday night that a $130,000 payment from Moline, that's M-O-L-I-N-E, healthcare, is expected this week and would be sufficient to cover the shortfall. Meanwhile, the agenda for tonight's County Board Committee of the Whole meeting includes a forbearance agreement with a therapy services provider at the nursing home, setting up a special schedule of payments over 18 months to Health Pro Therapy Services, LLC, which was owed more than $330,000 by the nursing home as of December 31, 2017. And a second item on the agenda requires about $27,000 in county funds to cover the cost of the nursing home's property and liability insurance, which Farney said is overdue. The forbearance agreement, said County Board Chairman C. Pius Weibel, comes from Health Pro. This is what they're offering to us. They said, this is what we'd like to do, Weibel said. We have to decide if we want to accept it or not. If we say yes, that means we have to crank out an extra $18,000 a month. Or if they sue us, it would be pretty hard for us to defend. In addition to a monthly payment of $17,775 plus 12% interest to HealthPro, the agreement requires that the county will stay current with new billings, Farney said. That's a pretty huge undertaking, he said. But it saves us from getting sued by another vendor, so it saves us legal fees. Both Farney and Weibel said they were concerned about the 12% interest rate HealthPro put in the proposed agreement. Farney also said he is disappointed with the performance of SAC, which took over management of the nursing home last July. SAC has not done a good job of communicating when the news is bad. Quit hiding things, quit pretending it's not happening, said Farney, who said he intends to tell SAC officials the same thing at a private meeting today. The nursing home has also been unable to come up with its portion of 2 months' worth of payment for the county's property and liability insurance, Farney said. The county board is scheduled to vote today on that $27,000 payment. Them not paying their portion of it could cause the cancellation of our insurance, he said. That's why the self-funding insurance fund is being asked to cover it for the home and will be billing it back to the nursing home. It's just increasing the debt they owe to the county. As of last month, the nursing home owed more than $5.5 million, of which about $2.7 million was due to various county accounts. SAC reported a $90,000 loss at the nursing home in December, but blamed that on one-time expenditures, including pay raises to employees and maintenance-related costs. But the home's census has remained basically unchanged since SAC took over last summer. It averaged 132 in August and 137 in December. It was 139 as an occupant on Monday. The financials are strong based on the fact that since we arrived, there's been a good upward trend, insisted SAC President Suzanne Koenig, K-O-E-N-I-G. Any facility in the state of Illinois that has to rely on any kind of government funding, we never know when we're going to get paid. We never know when the state is going to release the check. We never know when Molina is going to hold on to their money and when they're going to get paid. They don't pay us until they get paid. We're all waiting in the same boat. The next headline reads, Champagne Regulations. City to check up on food truck orders. Operators to weigh in on limitations. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Champaign. The way Dave Sam, S-A-A-M, sees it, mobile food trucks, such as his, do more than provide additional dining options. They boost economic development in areas where they set up shop. Customers are very positive toward these, he said. Studies that have been done about food trucks are that they increase vibrancy of an area. They increase economic development of the area. Sam, owner of the mobile wood-fired pizza business, Dragonfire Pizza, is among food truck owners and others invited to express their opinions about how these restaurants on wheels are being licensed and regulated in Champaign. The city plans to hold a public meeting on food trucks at 2 p.m. February 19th at the City Building, located at 102 North Neal Street, with an eye on possible changes. Champaign's food truck program started on a trial basis in 2012. Now that food trucks have had some years of experience operating under current guidelines, the city wants to hear about how well the program is working and whether there needs to be changes made in such rules as where and when food trucks can operate, according to City Clerk Marilyn Banks. Sam said he believes the city's food truck program is doing well, but he would like to see a broadening of locations, which under current city ordinance was limited to 7 spots in downtown Champaign and Campus Town for mobile food businesses licensed as food trucks. Some food trucks that set up shop elsewhere are licensed under different sections of city code. Urbana, for example, allows food trucks to park at about any meter that isn't designated as a maximum 2-hour meter, as long as the businesses feed the meters or rent bags for the meters at $19 each. Don't park right in front of a business or storefront or near a busy intersection, and don't get in the way of a bike lane or block the visibility of a crosswalk. In Champaign, right now, it's fairly limiting where food trucks can go, Sam said. Alvin, A-L-V-E-N, Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N, who operates the mobile popcorn and shaved ice business Cool Bliss Popped Bliss, would also like to see the potential locations in Champaign broadened, he said. And while the city is asking for opinions, Allison said, he would like to see city officials consider giving local food truck businesses an edge over out-of-towners for special events. I think with the events that the city has, I wish the city would try to get more of us local guys, he said. Among Champaign's ordinance requirements, licensed food trucks can only operate in designated vending areas between 6 a.m. and 3 a.m. and they can remain in one spot only for up to 4 consecutive hours. They can return to the same spot, but only after 2 hours have passed after they drive away. Food trucks also can't be parked in a way that blocks, obstructs, or interferes with traffic. They can't set up dining areas with tables, chairs, or tents in their vending areas, and their signs can't be any larger than 6 square feet. The city also restricts the noise level of food trucks to 75 decibels at 10 feet away. That noise level is said to be about how loud it is inside a vehicle on the highway and slightly quieter than running a garbage disposal. Those with something to say about food truck regulations who can't make it to the public meeting are invited to email their comments according to the city clerk's office. Email comments by 5 p.m. on February 21st to cityclerk@champaignill.gov. And now let's take a moment to look at our weather forecast over the next week. This is provided to us by Greg Soulje, S-O-U-L-J-E, and his column on the weather front. Today, Tuesday, 38 degrees, mostly sunny, more seasonal, east to southeast wind, 6 to 12 miles per hour. Overnight, not as cold, partly cloudy, low 29, south wind, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Wednesday, high of 48, low of 43, milder, partly sunny, south to southwest wind, 8 to 16 miles per hour. Overnight, increasing clouds, mild. Thursday, high of 53, low of 20, milder, cloudy, foggy, periods of rain, chance of rain is at 70%. Friday, the high will be 33, the low will be 27. It's colder, partly sunny. And Saturday, the high will be 37 degrees, the low will be 16 degrees. It will be partly cloudy, but seasonal. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. On Tuesdays, we'll introduce the kids behind High School Confidential. Today, Armstrong Potomac's Morgan Harding, a talented senior who will attend Danville Area Community College in the fall. What makes AP enrollment 138, that's 138, this is Armstrong Potomac. What makes it rock? Having a close atmosphere with everyone in the school, including teachers and staff, Harding said. On Friday, day and night, Morgan will take us behind the scenes when she takes over our Snapchat account. Follow along by searching for News Gazette on the app. It should be interesting. It's senior night for boys basketball players and cheerleaders. And now let's take a look at our online audience. What was trending last week at newsgazette.com, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday saw 1,082,946 page views. The three top stories were 1. Savoy man wanted in attempted murder case, arrested in Tennessee. 2. Tom's mailbag for February 9, 2018. 3. Crashes bogged down I-74 in Champaign County. The three top sports stories were 1. GCMS standout McNutt, that's M-C-N-U-T-T, signs with Illinois football. 2. Illini's sights set on Peyton. 3. One-on-one with Illini's Lovie Smith. Bigger, stronger, faster. The three top videos were 1. Crime Stoppers, Rantoul car burglaries. 2. Underwood, we took a step backward. And 3. How a letter from Mr. Rogers sparked Muhammad residents' obsession. And the three top photo galleries were 1. Signing day, locals heading to college. 2. Girls 2A regional title, St. Thomas More versus St. Joseph Ogden. And 3. 2A GRF regional final, Oakwood versus Monticello. And let's take a look at history. In area history in 1918. The Champaign Daily News, in an editorial, suggested that Governor Frank Loudon, L-O-W-D-E-N, should run for president. He has demonstrated those qualities of constructive statesmanship, which places him in the front rank of the men from which a choice must be made, and his party will honor itself by honoring him, said the newspaper. In 1968, Major Edward W. or Wally Crum, C-R-U-M, 31, the son of Mr. and Mrs. Edward A. Crum of Champaign, was killed February 6 by gunshot wounds in an enemy engagement during the recent fighting in Vietnam. Besides his parents, he left his wife of Salt Lake City and a 5-year-old daughter. In 2003, one of the University of Illinois' new trustees wasted no time getting involved. Immediately after being sworn in, Chicago engineer Niranjan Shah, S-H-A-H, nominated trustee Lawrence Epley, E-P-P-L-E-Y, as board chairman at the board's annual meeting. Epley was approved unanimously. I know of him very well through his work, Shaw said of Epley. He's a good man. There are many other good people on the board, but with budget cuts going on, he's a very good leader. The next headline reads, Champaign City Council, its city's move on Central Project. This article is written by Natalie Wickman and is based out of Champaign. Coming in 2018 to the neighborhood surrounding Champaign Central High School, orange cones and road closed signs. With construction on parts of Unit 4's $183.4 million facility upgrade package set to begin this year, the Champaign City Council tonight will take the first of two votes on an intergovernmental agreement with the Champaign School District. It calls for the evacuation of 3 city blocks over the next 3 years. Park Avenue, between New and Lynn Streets, sometime in 2018, to accommodate the biggest ticket project, the $87.1 million expansion of Central's campus, which is expected to be completed by August of 2022. Then there will be James Street between Park and University Avenues early in 2019 as part of the demolition and rebuilding of Dr. Howard Elementary School. According to the district's timeline, construction on the $16.1 million project will take place from August of this year through May 2020. Then there will be Lynn Street, L-Y-N-N Street, between Hill and Church Streets in 2020, to make room for the construction of new athletic fields for Central, soccer, and softball. Each block being evacuated is in a city-designated historic streetlight district, according to a city report. Included in the council vote is a decision to uproot those lights and either incorporate them into the construction or put them in a city inventory. If they're reused, the whole thing would be reused, not a piece or part of one, Bruce Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T, the city's planning and development director, said of the streetlights, which have large round bulbs on top. The three blocks are also part of a city-designated brick street preservation area, which would be waived if vacation is approved by the council. The next headline reads, school closures. Chicago alters disputed plan. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Chicago. Chicago Public Schools officials are changing a controversial plan that would have shuttered four high schools this summer in one of the city's highest crime and most impoverished areas to make way for a new $85 million school. Schools Chief Janice Jackson said Monday that she listened to community feedback. Neighborhood meetings on the closures were emotional, with residents blasting the plan that would have displaced hundreds of students. Now, one existing school will close for the new school to be built on site. A school board vote could take place February 28th. Initially, district officials cited low enrollment, among other things, with roughly 500 students between the four schools. The next headline reads, Interstate 74, State Police Probing Death. This article is based out of Tilton and is written by Tim Mitchell. State Police spent Monday night investigating a death on Interstate 74 in Tilton. State Trooper Tracy Lillard said that an individual was found dead Monday in the eastbound lanes of I-74 at milepost 213.5, 213.5, about a half mile west of the G Street exit. State Police crime scene investigators were contacted to look into the death, Lillard said. No other information was immediately available at this time. The next headline reads, Infinity Coaches Charity Challenge. Underwood United Way Advance. This article is based out of Champaign and is written by Deborah Pressey. Illinois basketball coach Brad Underwood and his charity partner, the United Way of Champaign County, have advanced to the semifinals in the Infinity Coaches Charity Challenge. Based on the number of votes he's received, Underwood has earned $10,000 for the local United Way and its work in the community, the agency said. Now more votes are needed for Underwood to make it into a final round and to have a shot at bringing more money in for the United Way. If Underwood advances to the final round, the United Way of Champaign County is guaranteed a $15,000 donation, and if he wins, there's a grand prize of $100,000. The current voting round began Monday and will run until 11:59 a.m. February 25th. The current to vote for Underwood, visit infinitytimeout.com. That's infinitytimeout, infinitytimeout.com, and click on Brad Underwood, or tweet or post on Instagram using hashtag timeout2vote, that's a number two, timeout2vote, and hashtag coach Brad Underwood. The next headline reads, Willard Airport. Jet returns after detecting smoke. This article is based out of Savoy and is written by Michael Kaiser, K-I-S-E-R, for WDWS 1400 AM. An American Eagle plane was forced to return to Willard Airport Monday morning after smoke was seen in the cockpit, Airport Executive Director Gene, G-E-N-E, Cossey, C-O-S-S-E-Y, said. Cossey said the plane landed without incident and was brought back to the terminal where all 35 passengers exited. Cossey said the smoke cleared up once the cockpit was vented. The issue is believed to have been caused by oil getting onto the auxiliary power unit near the cargo area, he added. There was no physical issue with the plane, and no one needed medical attention, Cossey said. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date Tuesday, February 13th, 2018. We'll resume shortly with reading of part two of the News Gazette, so stay with us. We thank you very much for listening, and we hope that you have a wonderful day.